This Holy Week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we're journeying on in Hebrews. Covenant blood, the willing victim. The new and living way, a better possession and an abiding one. And the roll call of faith, Abel and Enoch. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
We really believe this is a time when people should avoid gatherings of more than 10 people. And so we continue to urge churches around America to heed to that.
The desire to use government power to suppress religion is far, far more dangerous than the quote-unquote marriage of faith and government.
Death, I think, was, I wouldn't say it was accepted as part of life, but it was known that it was there and it was coming for you. That's something we kind of distract ourselves from today.
Son, be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven you. This addresses his greatest need, and that which is the source of all of our problems, namely sin. So his greatest need was to have his sins forgiven.
While cooking or canning, nursing babies or taking a break during nap time. Housewives love listening to Issues, etc.
It has been an unprecedented change in the lives of many, many Americans. I'm not talking about having to stay home or even the monumental economic shifts that are underway or the fear of contracting a disease that is pandemic across the globe. The change I'm talking about is Sunday morning. I've experienced it. If you are a regular attender at church, you've experienced it. You're sitting at home watching your pastor do his best, watching your priest do his best to go through what can only be this kind of awkward distance that is ordinarily gathered around an altar and a pulpit and a font with real people there living and breathing. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, April the 6th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about what Terry Mattingly calls mad preacher stories. While we're sitting at home, some pastors have their churches open for business, and they're getting a lot of the news coverage. A little bit later, Pastor David J. Weber joins us. We'll talk about online and family communion during the pandemic, and our series, Introducing the Books of the Bible, continues with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. We'll be looking at 2 Timothy. You can join us. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about what he calls mad preacher stories, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So, another piece about rebel pastors and coronavirus. Which is the bigger story, Terry? The 99% following the rules or the 1% who are disobeying?
Well, that's a pretty complex topic, and believe it or not, that burst into flame on Twitter this weekend. You know, another way that we could address this question is you and I have already talked about mad preacher syndrome. The question could be, why are we still talking about mad preacher syndrome? And that is because it's still news. Why is it still news? Well, for some reason, it's still in the news, which brings us to one of the most important questions about journalism that I end up talking to all the time with my students and to audiences, like at the Issues Etc. conference a year and a half ago. How do we decide what news is? How do we decide, to be specific in this case that you just asked about, how do we decide as journalists that the 99% of churches in America who are cooperating with shelter-in-place laws and orders and whatever, how do we decide that that astonishing historic change is not as important as a small handful of preachers, mad preachers, who believe they have a First Amendment right to hold their church services no matter what. Face-to-face, analog, shake hands, hug, sit 6 feet apart, but come in and out of the same church, stand in the same choir, church as usual or almost usual. And all of this, of course, is heightened by the fact that Holy Week and Easter in the West and next week in the East only cranks this up because we're dealing with the most important days in the Christian calendar. What makes the actions of a few preachers, invariably they are called mega church preachers, which calls up to mind certain images in your head, doesn't it? And if you followed the Twitter arguments carefully, one of the ghosts that's looming in this subject is people are convinced that this story is getting the huge coverage that it's getting because the preachers who are doing this, the vast majority of them, and there aren't that many, who are mostly in the Sun Belt, in the Bible Belt, and quite frankly, they walk, they talk, and they squawk just like Trump pastors. And so this is a perfect way to put in the headline that Trump evangelicals are now going out of their way to kill people. Quite literally, kill people. Hold services that are going to get their people killed and maybe even create hotspot events where these people go out into the world to their jobs, some of them at service stations, grocery stores, and other essential forms of work, where they then kill their neighbors or people with whom they keep contact with or have to have contact with. Could you think of a more five-star screaming example of what Trump evangelicals are willing to do? So, according to this side of the argument, that makes this a bigger story than the fact that thousands of churches, including the, I haven't heard of any exceptions to this, maybe there are some I'd love to hear, it seems to me that like the Southern Baptist Convention is following shelter in place. The Assemblies of God, as far as I can tell, are obeying shelter in places. If you actually look at real megachurches and you go to the websites of like the 20 to 25 biggest churches in America, that's 15,000 people and up to 40,000 people. If you go to their websites, you quickly find out, as we talked about last week, I think it was, you find out that they're all online. So what makes this group of pastors so important? More important than all the Catholics, the Orthodox, the ordinary Jewish communities, mosques, Southern Baptist churches, makes everybody else that's going online in the name of public safety. What makes these pastors big news? And my point today is that this is a perfect way of talking about this dilemma of what makes news in the first place. Why are some things news and other things not news? That's one of the big subjects, wouldn't you say, we've been talking about for 5 years?
Sure. What I'm curious about here, Terry, is in the stories about these mad preachers, the presumption, or the bias as you put it, seems to be that these preachers having their people meet is primarily a political statement. It's somehow in favor of, even though the president's telling people to stay home, it's somehow a political statement in favor of President Trump. Are those questions being asked of the parishioners and of the pastors in these stories? Are they asking those questions? Like, why are you doing this? Is this about the First Amendment, or is this about a political statement?
Well, it started out as a political statement. And I still think the Trump factor looms over this because the Trump factor looms over everything. But it started out as a political story until suddenly you had the president of the United States saying, please stay indoors, you know, for at least 2 weeks, and then for at least a month, please help us lower the curve, please, please, please. And then Trump, as always, will go on with some hopeful language that makes other people upset, because Trump is incapable of not making people upset, and some people are incapable of not being made upset by Trump. They deserve each other in some ways. But now this has turned into a kind of theological story. And this is where it's really interesting. I don't know if this is happening among Lutherans, but I've seen this among Catholics in particular and among a handful of Orthodox. People have begun to ask the question about confession and the sacraments. And the question can be shaped something like this. How come Christians for centuries were willing to risk their lives to go to confession and for priests to give Holy Communion? Why were they willing to risk it then? And our government is now telling us that we can't risk it now. Have you heard that question?
Yes, I have occasionally.
Well, it's everywhere right now, especially in Catholic circles for some reason. And I think some of that then, that gets political because it's, oh, well, it's Pope Francis who doesn't want us to go to confession. It's Pope Francis who doesn't want us to give communion, who doesn't want us to celebrate Easter. So kind of it's theological politics kick in. I was on a thread earlier, and I was trying to think of a way to discern this. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote a column about the heroic Orthodox priest who, during the Spanish flu, went all over the plains and ended up dying of the flu because he was taking communion and doing last rites and whatever. And someone says, well, why can't we be as courageous as him? Well, first of all, I think if he had known, if they knew as much then about science as we know now, I think he might have done that differently. I think his bishop might have instructed him to do that differently. I know of priests right now, I mean, in Orthodoxy, priests have a permission from their bishops to go to the sick and dying and help them. And the priests are going to do everything they can to protect themselves, because by doing that, they're protecting their own families and then their own people. And the image I came up with was that, oh yes, Christian history is packed with stories of martyrs saying, I refuse to surrender the faith. I refuse to stop practicing the faith. I am going to uphold the name of Jesus Christ. And like in illegal churches in China and elsewhere, I'm going to go to the sacraments. And we hail that properly as courage. The issue here is somewhat different. The way I put it in a tweet the other day, and I just put another one up with the same argument. What we're dealing with here is a martyr is someone who says, I choose to die for the faith rather than compromise or surrender. What we're dealing with here in these mad preacher situations and in parallel structures, we're dealing with people who are saying, I choose to die for the faith or to risk my life for the faith. Oh, and by the way, could you kill these other 10 people too? Could you kill them for me? These other people that my decision is now going to somehow lead to their death. Well, this is all a huge and complex story. I want to get back to journalism by asking you, how many reporters do you know that you would trust to cover the theological arguments in that story?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about what he calls mad preacher stories. What other biases are there that make a handful of people who are still holding their church services bigger news than the vast majority? Well, the near complete majority of churches that are being law-abiding. Stay tuned.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. classicalspecialneeds.com.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Your church Easter egg hunt has been canceled. But that doesn't mean there aren't wonderful treasures to be discovered at Ad Crucem. Celebrate your child's confirmation with Lutheran certificates, necklaces, and memory boxes, and wish all your loved ones a joyous, if socially distanced, Eastertide with our Christ-focused greeting cards. Put what you believe, teach, and confess on display with our Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, and Athanasian Creed. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We're talking about mad preacher stories. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is also founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, what are some of the other biases that make kind of the handful of mad preachers bigger news than the vast majority of churches that are staying in place?
Well, in a way, this is something like the question that I've spent a couple of decades of my life trying to explain to incoming journalism students. I mean, the question, what is news, is huge. It's at the heart of a lot of things. One person wants to find news as whatever society is chattering about, and that's to some degree true. Except that the people who are in newsrooms don't necessarily hear what everyone is chattering about. The question of what is big news is something that I believe it was William Randolph Hearst who once said that news is big because it's bigger than whatever was the news on that particular day. And I think it was Hearst who said, if you print the headline big enough, the story gets bigger, which kind of is what we're dealing with right now. So the question right now is who decides what is news and what makes them decide it? For a long time, I've been doing a lecture on the four biases that impact the coverage of religion. And all of them literally are involved in the story we're talking about. First of all, I think our listeners need to know that what I call the bias of space, time, and resources affects the coverage of news. And right now, don't forget that your newsrooms, the people who cover the news nearest you, they're sheltering in place too, or they're risking their life, and they have a fall off in ad revenue that's linked to everything else. It's been horrible for a decade, but it's getting even worse right now. So sometimes it's hard to cover a story if you don't have enough money and resources and people with which to cover it. And that's affecting a lot of this. So if you have a story that involves one crazy preacher near your newspaper or near your TV station or near your big newsroom in Atlanta or whatever, and there's one guy down south in Georgia who goes nuts and decides everybody should still have a revival meeting and hug each other, which story is easier to cover with resources and a lack of time? Which story's easier and quicker to cover, the one mad preacher or a story that would make you have to contact the leaders of every single major religious denomination and tradition in your area and try to figure out how they're handling online worship? Do you see my point? One's a story that you can cover with one or two phone calls and a quote, and maybe he answers your email, or you go to this Mad Preacher's Facebook page and get one quote, and suddenly you've got a 15-inch clickable clickbait story that people are going to read. The other story, even for a veteran religion reporter, would take days of work. And ideally, you'd want to go to some of these churches where they're doing online worship, or you'd like to sit in the living rooms of a family as they take part in online worship and ask them what difference this makes in their lives. But can you do that right now under shelter-in-place laws? No. The second bias is the bias of knowledge. And that's the one I was, in effect, asking you just a second ago with the theological question about the martyrs and, you know, risking your life versus risking the lives of others and the theology of all that. And I asked you, how many reporters would you trust to cover that story? In effect, I was asking you a knowledge story. See, it's very hard to cover a story that you don't know exists. A simple fact. I mean, I would trust Emma Green at The Atlantic, and there's several other reporters in America that I would think would go after this story and do a fine job of it if their editor gave them the time to do it. So we're back to the resources. The third bias is what I call the bias of worldview. Now, this is where we start getting close to the whole Trump factor and stereotypes and whatever else. I sum up this bias, the bias of worldview, as it's hard to cover a story if you don't care that it exists. And now we're getting down to the fact that at some point, editors in a newsroom have to care about whether a story gets covered or not. And right now, which story do they care the most about? Well, they care about what the Vatican does. And that's a pretty easy story to cover. Or they care about politics, because editors tend to always care about politics. And that's high in their worldview. So this religion story looks kind of political. So that makes it more important than this other story that looks really kind of theologically wonky and complicated and insider baseball. And the fact that it happens to affect almost every single Christian on planet Earth may not factor in as much. And then finally, the bias that a lot of people, including many, many Christians on Twitter, jump to is they assume, oh, journalists are doing this because they're actually biased against us in the sense of the bias of prejudice. They're writing the mad preacher stories and ignoring the poignant stories about Easter and Pascha and confession and sacraments. They're ignoring those stories because they hate us. It's hard to cover a story if you're negatively prejudiced against people. I try to get people all the time to understand that a bias of negative prejudice that happens from time to time. I've seen it happen. But I think it's the rarest of the biases. And really, I think worldview is the most powerful of the biases. Stories tend to be big because editors think they're big. What makes them think the stories are big? Because those stories somehow fit with how they view the world, the lens through which they view the world. And the biggest lens in a vast majority of newsrooms is politics. And then there's the very real factor that it's so much easier to cover the quick and dirty story, which also, by the way, is going to have a great clickbait headline, as opposed to the big, complex, theological, deep story that's going to take longer to cover. Do you see how that fits into the mad preacher situation?
So which bias is this? And I guess it's kind of the notion that if you would have told a religion beat journalist or editor 6 months ago, that in 6 months, almost all the churches on the planet would effectively be closed, and people would be doing their best to connect with preaching and their pastors and things like that. they would have said, well, that's an enormous story. That could be the story of the year. Is what about it getting just pushed out of the way by all the other stories?
Yeah. And online church, let's be clear, online church has gotten a lot of coverage, but it's tended to be coverage at the local level, very small and very focused. What we haven't seen is the big sweeping national story in page one of the New York Times, CNN, you know, a dedicated hour to it in the midst of coronavirus coverage at Fox or anywhere else. It's tended to be very quick and dirty little stories. I don't mean dirty in a bad sense. I mean quick and easy stories. That's more like it. I think people would say that's a really big story. But right now I have three reporters who can leave their houses. Half my staff has been laid off or is on furlough because of this. And I've got this crazy preacher 100 miles from here who is risking people's lives. That story's big. It's going on page one. And that interesting, positive, poignant story, I don't have the person power to get that done. Let me give you one or two other examples. The column I'm working on this week is about Passover. And right now, Jewish people all across America are about to have Passover Seders. And one of the most important things about a Passover Seder is that it's multi-generational. There are roles for children, roles for adults. The elders, the grandparents, play a huge role in these Passover Seders, are given a part of the liturgy. How do you do that now? How do you hold a Passover Seder now? I spent the day reading a bunch of responses from people who are about to have to do their Passover Seder alone. For the first time in their life, for one of the first times in Jewish history, they're going to have to choose to do their Passover Seders alone. And how does that change the meaning? Well, once again, aren't we dealing with a theological problem? But it's a theological problem that's going to make grandparents weep because they can't do Passover with their grandchildren. It has children worried about their parents and their grandparents. Or grandpa and mama, are they going to make it? What can we do to help them, but we can't do Passover with them? Anyway, this is really, to me, a great example of both why religion is so hard to cover and why so many editors shy away from it. But do you see the poignancy of that story? How poignant for you as a pastor, Todd, is it going to be to spend Easter sitting and looking into your iPhone or whatever other kind of camera you aim at yourself under those circumstances? My own priest said this Sunday while doing the Divine Liturgy, he looked into the camera and said, I hope I never, ever think this is normal. I do not want to even contemplate having to think that this is normal. Huge stories. I hope there are people with the eyes to see and a little bit of time given by their editors to cover some of these things.
With about 30 seconds here, Terry, we're coming up on the Western observance of Easter, the day for Christian worship and especially for the celebration of the Eucharist. What story must be written going into this very unusual Easter?
Well, I think there's one that's particularly poignant to me. And let's avoid the whole thing about Easter Christians and all of that. In the liturgical churches of America, I don't know about Lutheranism at this point, it has become normal for new Christians or people who are changing traditions to enter the Catholic Church and to enter the Orthodox Church in Holy Week, at the start of Holy Week, or even more poignantly, on Holy Saturday. That was when I joined the Orthodox Church, during a service on Holy Saturday. All over America right now, there are people who have spent 9 months preparing to join these great traditions, and now they're on hold again. they're still going to have to sit there and wait to even get to join the communion. In other words, it's one thing to have communion with a large C denied you, but there's an interesting group of people out there right now, Todd, who are being denied their own place in the communion by this virus. They can't join and sacramentally be united to an ancient body of Christ that they have chosen to join. They can't take that final step because of the virus. It's preventing the services in which they can join. I think that's a big story, and if I was in a major news market right now, that's the one I'd be trying to sell to an editor.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here, and have a good Holy Week.
We'll be talking with Pastor David J. Weber on the other side of the break. We're going to spend some time on the subject of online and family communion during the pandemic. Stay tuned.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The world around us raises all sorts of reasons why Christ could not have risen from the dead. The April issue of the Lutheran Witness discusses how we can, in fact, know that Christ rose from the dead. Adam Francisco answers resurrection objections. Kirk Clayton explains how the Bible proves Christ's resurrection, and there's so much more. Here, Lutherans have an opportunity. For a world focused on fear of death and COVID-19, we can point them to the resurrected Christ. To learn more about this, visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.
Did you know that for over 40 years, Lutheran Church Extension Fund has had the humble privilege of supporting Lutheran Church Missouri Synod ministries with low-cost loans and resources? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Because of faithful investors like you, we've been able to help church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations. To learn how you can get involved, call 800-843-8233.